It's Friday, September 25th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, Washington prepares for a state visit of the Chinese president.
There's an atmosphere of deepening suspicion and some pessimism, particularly on the U.S. side.
Presidents Barack Obama and Xi Jinping have large issues ahead. Also ahead, American is jailed in China, accused of spying. Muslims around the world celebrate, and will music fans be able to celebrate a reunion? It's all coming up on today's International Edition. Chinese President Xi Jinping is on his way to Washington at this hour for talks with President Barack Obama that will focus on various issues, including reducing air pollution and cyber attacks. On Wednesday in Seattle, President Xi met with top leaders of some of America's largest tech companies, including Microsoft, Boeing, and Facebook. Aaron Friedman is a senior advisor for the National Bureau of Asian Research, and he joins us by telephone. Mr. Friedman, what is the overall atmosphere of the two presidents as they meet?
This is the second meeting between Xi Jinping as president and President Obama. It's going to be the first one in Washington. The last time they met in the United States was in 2013 at the so-called Sunnylands Summit. So this is of the location of this meeting is of some significance. I would say, it has to be said, that there's an atmosphere of deepening suspicion and some pessimism, particularly on the U.S. side, which is a result, as many Americans see it, of China's internal policies, and particularly Xi Jinping's policies since 2012, and also, maybe even more so, China's external behavior, the ongoing maritime disputes in the South China Sea and the East China Sea.
What is the relationship between these two men in terms of official capacity? Does the fact that President Obama, nearing the end of his presidency, diminish his negotiating power in the eyes of the Chinese?
The two leaders are at different points in their respective administrations. So President Obama is, of course, near the end of his second term, having been in office now, going into his eighth year. So he is on his way out. Xi Jinping, by contrast, is about 3 years into a projected 10-year term. So he's got a long way ahead of him, and President Obama has a relatively short time yet to go in office. That said, and for similar and also some different reasons, I think both of the leaders have an interest in at least the appearance of success. Neither one wants any kind of confrontation or blow-up or obvious negative publicity that might come from this meeting. They would like to deliver some so-called deliverables. They'd like to be able to say that they made progress on some important issues. I think this is important for the Chinese leader back in Beijing and in China, partly because of the recent difficulties in the Chinese economy, as well as the more typical concerns about China's status and the respect that it receives from other powers, particularly great powers like the United States. And on the U.S. side, I think a continuing desire on the part of the Obama administration as it moves towards its end to make progress in the relationship with China, be able to go out on a positive note, and so on.
You mentioned some of China's external activities. What are the main national security issues anticipated to be discussed?
The big issues are obviously going to be maritime disputes and also even more, I think, the cyber issue. I wouldn't expect serious progress on either one of those, but there may be kind of symbolic agreements or statements that at least suggest an inclination to address these questions further on both sides.
Many recent media reports have suggested the United States is considering sanctions against China following a series of serious cyber thefts. Do you feel that's a substantial possibility?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question whether, in fact, the administration will impose sanctions. As you mentioned, there have been a number of news accounts in the weeks leading up to the summit suggesting that there was an internal debate on this issue. At least that was the implication of the stories, with some people advocating stronger measures than others. Those stories might have a number of different explanations. One might be that the administration was signaling to the Chinese leadership that it was serious in the hopes of getting some kind of concessions from them at the summit. The other is that it may be reflective of genuine divisions inside the administration, in particular between the White House and parts of the professional bureaucracy, in this case the intelligence community in particular, We've seen similar indications of similar divisions between the White House and military, particularly the Navy, as to how to react to China's so-called land reclamation or construction of islands in the South China Sea. So there do seem to be some divisions inside the administration about how strongly to react.
Aaron Friedman, senior advisor for the National Bureau of Asian Research. It's time for us to check out reactions to President Xi's visit online. And as always, our social media guru, G. Abby Lee, is right here in Studio 22. Hi, G.
Hi, Jim.
What are some of the hashtags that people can use to keep updated on Twitter?
Well, I know it's not that exciting, but his full name, at Xi Jinping, is the most popular hashtag to use in this case. And in the last 24 hours, that hashtag was used in nearly 2,500 tweets. Another hashtag that Chinese media outlets are using a lot is hashtag XiUSAVisit. But I don't think that's as easy to remember as, say, hashtag PopeinDC or hashtag Xi Jinping. Only slightly more than 1,000 tweets used hashtag XiUSAVisit, and most of the tweets, I have to say, are from the Chinese state-run media outlets.
Well, speaking of which, what are the Chinese media outlets like Xinhua or CCTV tweeting about it?
Well, both of the accounts have tweeted multiple times about the visit Thursday. The Xinhua news agency at XH News on Twitter sent out this tweet: Chinese President Xi Jinping in the United States for a state visit at the invitation of U.S. President at Barack Obama. That's been marked as a favorite nearly 780 times. And Jim, I want to ask you and our listeners, how often do we see President Obama tagged on Twitter as at Barack Obama?
Well, probably not too often, I'd say, and for a good reason.
Exactly. At Barack Obama is an account run by Organization for Action staff, and we normally use at POTUS, which is an acronym for President of the United States.
Well, that's very true, and we like keeping things balanced, so tell us what U.S. media outlets are tweeting as well.
Sure. An article posted on our Facebook page, which is VOA Asia, is getting a lot of attention, reaching more than 5,000 people as we speak. It's titled Agenda for Obama Xi to Include North Korea's Threats. Now, Pyongyang in recent weeks have been warning the international community about rocket launch and nuclear tests. And while the leaders are going to have in-depth discussion about North Korea, experts say they're probably not going to take a stronger stance on the issue. Jim?
Well, thank you for that great analysis, G. You know, go to your computer or your phone and type in at G. Abby Lee on Twitter, and then you can follow her. Also, follow us at VOA International Edition, our account at VOA underscore IE. This is VOA.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This is VOA's International Edition. The visit of Chinese President Xi Jinping to Washington comes only days after Chinese authorities formally arrested and jailed a U.S. businesswoman from Houston on suspicion of spying and stealing state secrets. VOA correspondent Greg Flakus joins us from Houston. Greg, tell us more about this arrest.
Sandy Phan Gillis is a Vietnamese refugee. She came here as a teenager, and she's been here for some 40 years. She's now 55 years old. She's of Chinese descent, so she has quite a bit of knowledge of Asia and Asian languages. She can speak Vietnamese and both Cantonese and Mandarin Chinese, and she has been working now for several years facilitating businesses here that want to connect with firms in China to have commercial relations. And she's had frequent trips to China, and this last trip she was on was in March with the deputy pro tem mayor of Houston, Ed Gonzalez, as well as some Chinese business people from here. And it was billed as a trade mission. They were going around to various cities and looking into possibilities for commercial connections. When the rest of the group crossed over to Macau and prepared for the next phase of their trip, they noticed she was missing, that she hadn't come. It turned out that she'd been detained by the Chinese Ministry of State, the so-called spy agency of China. Now, under Chinese law, they can hold someone for up to 6 months without any charge and without even a formal arrest, just for investigation purposes. So that six-month period came up just within this week, and so then they formally arrested her and put her into jail. They'd been holding her in what they called a residential detention facility before that, probably something like a small apartment. So now she is in an actual jail, even though they haven't fully or formally charged her. But when asked about it, the Chinese government has said that she is suspected of spying and stealing state secrets.
Greg, have they given any indication as to details of what sort of secrets they allege that she has taken?
No, they haven't. And that's been one of the frustrating things about this. U.S. officials have asked about it, and they haven't evidently, as far as we know, gotten any answers on that. Her husband has not been very satisfied. He's been very frustrated trying to get any information.
I understand that he's asking the President of the United States, as well as the State Department to help win her release.
Yes, Jeff Gillis did some research on this, and he found that in about 14 cases in the past, when there have been Americans detained in China, they were released on the eve of or close to the time of a state visit. So he thought this might be his best bet. He'd been kind of keeping it quiet over the last 6 months, hoping that something could be worked out through back channels. But he finally decided that wasn't going to happen and that he had better try to do something now. And this is why he's gone public with it now.
Greg Flakus is our senior correspondent based in Houston, Texas. Greg, thank you so much for joining us.
Glad to be here.
As Muslims around the world are celebrating Eid al-Adha, or the Festival of Sacrifice, within the annual Muslims pilgrimage to Mecca known as the Hajj, more than 700 people are dead and hundreds more injured after there was a stampede in Mina, that on the outskirts of the holy city of Mecca. On a happier note, Muslim Americans celebrated the holiday to commemorate their belief in Abraham's willingness to follow God's command to sacrifice his son and Ishmael's consent to being sacrificed. International Edition's senior Middle East reporter Mohammed El-Shanawi visited an Eid celebration by Muslim Americans in Northern Virginia, near Washington, D.C. Mohammed, what are the basic characteristics of the celebration?
Well, Muslims observe and prepare for Eid al-Adha in a number of steps. Before the festival, the faithful acquire new clothing and gather with family and friends. And at Eid's dawn, Muslims recite the traditional declaration of faith, the takbir, praising God, and followed by the pre-sunrise communal prayer or Salat al-Eid.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. La ilaha illallah.
American Muslims gather in large groups for the prayer. This specific group has a small Islamic center that cannot absorb the large numbers of worshippers, so they perform the Eid prayers at a nearby church, as Omar Abdurrahim explains.
What we have been able to do, and what other Islamic centers as well have been able to do, is to reach out to the local community. And some of these centers consist of churches, community centers, could be synagogues. And what happens is we're able to establish a relationship with these organizations to utilize their facilities for our worship services.
One important aspect of the prayers is to listen to a sermon calling on Muslims to feed the poor.
What follows the pre-sunrise prayers, Muhammad?
Well, today it's marked by slaughtering animals to feed the poor. As a symbolic act, Muslims who can afford it slaughter a cow, a goat, or a sheep, keeping a portion to feed themselves and distributing the rest to the needy. Worshippers then greet friends with the traditional Arabic salutation Eid Mubarak, which means have a blessed Eid, and then exchange gifts. Coming at the end of the Hajj, a journey of dedication or purification, the Eid celebration means for Muslim Americans there are few days before they welcome their loved ones who performed pilgrimage in Saudi Arabia.
Mohammed El-Shanawi, our senior Middle East correspondent. Thank you, Mohammed.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
Superstar diva Beyoncé's father, Matthew Knowles, says that there might be a reunion of the group that launched his daughter's career. That, of course, would be Destiny's Child. However, as International Edition's David Byrd and VOA Soul Lounge host Shauna Renee tell us, that might be more wishful thinking than reality.
So we're talking about Beyoncé, Kelly, and Michelle.
And
okay,
their father, Matthew Knowles,
manages, technically manages Destiny's Child. Now, each of these ladies have gone on to do their own thing as solo artists. And so he's kind of sitting around without much to do and happened to do an interview with Huffington Post recently and said, hey, I'm working on a Destiny's Child project. I'm hoping to get the girls back together so that they can tour and do an album. And he says he's working on a new book. It will be a Destiny's Child autobiography, he says, and he's also working on a deal, shopping it around with some television and maybe even movie studios. We're thinking Destiny's Child biopic, perhaps. Now, this is what he's saying.
You ain't running game. Say my name, you acting kind of shady, ain't calling me baby, better say my name.
The other day, I would call, you would say, baby, how's your day, but today.
It is also important to note, however, that Beyoncé, his daughter, no longer works with him. She fired him as her manager, as a solo artist. But apparently, technically and legally, he still manages Destiny's Child as the unit. So he has the ability to say these things. And I guess if the girls agree, he would be managing and releasing these projects as well.
Yeah, but it's a well-known fact that Jay-Z is kind of in charge of Beyoncé's career now, right? Isn't he?
I wouldn't say Jay-Z is in charge of her career. I would say Beyoncé is in charge of Beyoncé's career. But Jay-Z definitely, as her husband and as a mogul himself, definitely has more influence over her career than her father has had in many, many years.
Yeah, I was speaking more from the business end, not the relational end, that, you know, her husband is being a hip-hop mogul, is not going to want anybody trying to kind of wriggle their way in to the business end of her career.
Right. But again, I think it's also important to note that she fired him.
Right.
They don't have a very good relationship. So I don't think Jay-Z has anything to worry about, because I don't think Beyonce will allow Matthew Knowles to wiggle his way back into her career.
All right. Well, we'll see if this actually comes to pass. If you have any comments about this subject or anything you hear on our show, you can send a tweet to Shauna. She is at VOA Lady DJ. You can also hook up with her at VOA underscore music. And be sure to listen for her in the Soul Lounge. You can find that on our website, voanews.com.
Now that you're out of my life, I'm so much better. You thought that I'd be weak without you, but I'm stronger. You thought that I'd be broke without you, but I'm richer. You thought that I'd be sad without you, I laugh harder. Thought I wouldn't grow without you, now I'm wiser. Thought that I'd be helpless without you, but I'm smarter. You thought that I'd be stressed without you, but I'm chilling.
You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at our website. It's voanews.com. And you can follow us online anytime you like. Just follow us on Twitter at VOA underscore IE. We'd like to thank Tracy Carter, who is our director, and Carl Starling, our engineer, and you for listening. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Every year, as required by law, the President of the United States informs the Congress which countries produce illicit drugs or serve as transit points. But that does not mean that their governments are not making a substantial effort to rectify the situation, or that they are not cooperating with the United States and other nations to control the production and flow of illegal drugs. It just means that due to a combination of geographic, commercial, political, and economic factors, those who produce or smuggle narcotics deem these countries to be convenient for the operation of their nefarious trade. Of the 22 countries that made this year's list, 17 are in Latin America. Though Bolivia and Venezuela did not make meaningful efforts to meet their obligations to international counter-narcotics agreements over the past year, four Latin American countries made commendable progress. Last year, about 86% of cocaine destined for the United States moved through seven countries in Central America. The remaining 14% traveled through the Caribbean. Mexico, working with the United States through the Merida Initiative, made headway toward breaking the power and impunity of transnational criminal organizations, strengthening border controls and law enforcement, and improving the capacity of its judicial system to investigate and prosecute drug cases. In the Caribbean, Haiti took advantage of U.S. technical assistance and financial support to strengthen its police brigade in the fight against narcotics trafficking. Summoning considerable political will, Haiti's government stood up to criminal organizations, improved its counter-narcotics capability, beefed up its maritime interdiction, allowing it to start seizing drug shipments, and last year passed a law criminalizing public corruption, which goes hand in hand with the illicit drug trade. In South America, Colombia and Peru, countries that struggle with large-scale drug production, have been successful in seizing numerous large shipments of cocaine. Peru developed alternative livelihoods for farmers previously dependent on illicit cultivation, while Colombia's eradication efforts helped reduce coca cultivation by 52% in 5 years. Illicit drugs are destructive to people and society. The United States will continue to expand and enhance collaborative counter-narcotics and anti-crime partnerships to eradicate them globally.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.